From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Malone, and this is Invest Insights. Each week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro areas. Real leaders, real insights, right now. Welcome to Invest Insights. On October 22nd, 2020, Capital Analytics, our parent company, hosted the launch conference of our first edition of Invest Orlando. The virtual event focused on two key areas, healthcare and development. In this episode, we're featuring the healthcare panel, Keeping Orlando Healthy, the Current and Future Landscape of the Healthcare Sector. The moderator was Max Crampton Thomas, the regional editor for Capital Analytics, and panelists included Tony Jenkins, the market president of the Central Florida region for Florida Blue, Jennifer Walson-Benn, the president and CEO of Acute Care Services for Advent Health Central Florida, and Babette Hanke, the CEO of Aspire Health Partners. Please help me welcome our opening keynote, Mayor Jerry Demings of Orange County.
All right, let me begin by just saying congratulations to Capital Analytics CEO, Mr. Abby Malone, and the Invest Orlando group for kicking off this very first Orlando 2020 official virtual launch conference. You have an excellent lineup of speakers today, and I know that this will be an informative session for all of you engaging as we traverse this new virtual landscape that we're all living through a pandemic. I would like to take you back just a few months before we knew anything about the virus that would change our lives forever. In 2019, we had a record-setting 75 million visitors coming to Orange County with a $70 billion economic impact. This made Orange County the most visited destination in North America. With our growth in tourism and convention business, we were moving forward towards a $605 million expansion project at our Orange County Convention Center. Our building division permitted $781 million in new residential construction and $390 million in new commercial construction, totaling over $1.2 billion. Central Florida is the epicenter of modeling, simulation, and training. Our MS&T includes Team Orlando. They have been responsible for $6 billion in military contracting annually for the Navy, Army, Air Force, and the Marines. We also launched a transportation sales tax initiative to develop a funding plan to address our present and long-term transportation needs. I might add, however, that due to the current economic downturn, we have suspended our efforts this year to move forward with a sales tax ballot initiative that would have been on the ballot November 3rd. That is a discussion that we have to have for another day as we look to try to solve those transportation challenges that we have. We heard from Brightline Trains. They did a groundbreaking of a privately funded infrastructure project that would expand its passenger rail from South Florida to the Orlando International Airport. Discussions remain underway about further connectivity with the I-4 corridor and perhaps even with the Disney area as well. We'll see where all of those conversations take us in the near future. We also celebrated the grand opening of the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions' $14 million, 22,000 square foot international headquarters here within our community. Our economy was thriving in 2019, and as we began 2020, this year, known as the Year of Vision, had we known what we know now, we would have paused for all of the complexities dealing with the pandemic that we see before us today. Due to the threat of COVID-19, on March the 13th, I issued a state of local emergency here in Orange County. We remain under that same state of emergency today as we've seen this global pandemic claim over 220,000 lives across America. And we watched over 8.2 million cases developed in the United States. And sadly, the progression continues throughout the world and right into our own community. As we continue to monitor Orange County's COVID-19 cases, we have experienced the unfortunate loss of 532 lives right here in our community. And we currently have a reported over 43,000 positive cases of the novel coronavirus within our community. We've also seen the pandemic take a toll on employment. To date, Orlando has the fifth highest unemployment rate of large metropolitan areas in the country. Our unemployment rate is estimated at about 11.4%. However, this data does not include job losses recently announced by Disney or other or more recent layoffs within our community. Our economy will continue to struggle, is what I'm saying to you. According to the State Department of Economic Opportunity, as of October the 9th of this year, over 2 million people in Florida have received state and federal unemployment benefits since March, totaling over $17 billion. In April, we launched the Orange County Economic Recovery Task Force to assist the county in developing a plan for reopening business in a safe and responsible manner. The 50-member task force met for several months and created guidelines for reopening businesses, launched a consumer confidence survey, and reviewed the reopening plans for our theme parks and smaller attractions. In June, Orange County received $243 million in federal CARES Act relief funding. These funds have been distributed back into the community through programs that impact those with the greatest needs. These dollars have been put in place to benefit families, individuals, businesses, in particular our small businesses, as well as nonprofit organizations. To date, we have provided over $30 million in funding through our individual and family crisis assistance program. The program provides residents in funding for rent, utility, and other medical bills. We have also provided over $60 million to our small businesses, and we've assisted 3,715 different landlords and tenants through our eviction diversion program. $36 million has been dedicated for social services and nonprofits who have seen an increase in service needs due to the pandemic. In addition, we are working with the United Arts to disperse $5 million in funding for arts facilities as they begin to reopen and re-engage. We are working with the local partners to train tourism and hospitality workers that have been hit hard by the crisis and lead them into a new career pathway. Through the Orange County CARES funding and other federal and state grant programs, we continue to assist small businesses to help them keep their doors open and appropriately staffed. As we have all quickly learned to adapt to this virtual environment, we have seen businesses change their business model and reimagine their possibilities. For example, artificial intelligence may be the single most important factor for accelerating the development of vaccines and therapeutic treatments. Upskilling and retraining our workers so they can take advantage of jobs in healthcare and manufacturing will assist in the stabilization of our workforce. Our community has also seen the benefits of working with professional sports organizations as Walt Disney World's ESPN Wide World of Sports hosted the NBA in the bubble as they resumed their games. The NBA Finals were held right here in our backyard. In addition, we saw Major League Soccer re-engage at the Disney ESPN and now re-engage within the Exploria Stadium here within downtown Orlando. As our economy slowly rebounds, I am confident that our business industries and tourism will recover. As one of the first convention centers in the United States to implement a strategic preventative strategy, we have seen in our conventions and trade shows rescheduled, and we have successfully held several shows this year to include the AAU Junior National Volleyball Championship. As I conclude my remarks, Invest Orlando remains a valuable tool during these challenging times. Through Invest Orlando, we will have access to meaningful statistics and local C-level executive insights to promote our economic values. This information will be used in our new industry diversification marketing efforts for economic development opportunities, as well as within collateral to promote the region to the nation and foreign trade delegations. I would like to thank Invest Orlando, as well as Ms. Abby Malone, for inviting me to participate today. We certainly hope that you have a wonderful conference, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to participate today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mayor Demings. I'm really excited for the rest of the panels that we have going. You set us up for a wonderful conference indeed. I mentioned the report a number of times. If anyone is interested in obtaining a copy, please do contact us at contact@capitalaa.com, or please visit our website to find out more information. But I am pleased to start the next panel. Unfortunately, Dr. Odedina was not able to join us today, but as we've spoken and we will continue to speak about how challenges present opportunities, our own Max Crampton Thomas, our regional editor here at Capital Analytics, will be taking the helm to lead this panel. So, Max, I turn it over to you to welcome your panelists.
Thank you, Abby. Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well today. I know we are on a bit of a time crunch, so I don't want to waste too much time. But before we begin, I'd love for everyone to do a quick introduction to themselves. And I'm going to ask something that may be the easiest, but it also may be the hardest question of the day. So if you can, panelists, just give your name, your title, your company. And then if you were to use one word to describe what the last year has been like for your organization so far, what word would you use?
So I guess I'll jump off and go first. My name is Tony Jenkins, and I'm the market president for Florida Blue, your Blue Cross and Blue Shield Florida plan for the Central Florida region. And the one word that I would have to use would be pivoting.
Hi, I'm Babette Hanke. I'm the president and CEO of Aspire Health Partners. And the word I would use is ever-changing.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wonderslaven, and I'm the CEO for Acute Care Services, which is really for all of our hospitals and emergency rooms for Advent Health here in Central Florida. And the word I would use is I'm inspired by all of the caregivers and the first responders in the community.
Absolutely. And I would probably, although no one asked, I'd probably use the word perseverance. So we should. I want to jump right into this. And really, I think it's important for us to kind of set the foundation of how we got here, just kind of the whole year. So starting off, I wanted to pose the question to all of you. When you look at the last 7 months now, where does your organization stand right now in regards to the pandemic? What were some of the major initiatives and actions taken? And really, how do you feel this has prepared you for a post-pandemic landscape? Tony, I'm going to go ahead and start with you.
Well, being a mission-driven organization that's really not beholden to stockholders, our members are our shareholders. So we've tried our best to keep our members at the forefront of everything that we have done. So we've really worked hard at trying to meet their needs through innovative solutions, taking a look at different plans that we offer through the individual market, through the group market. You will hear me talk a little bit later about introducing more virtual health capabilities because folks have not necessarily been wanting to go into face-to-face visits, but we still want to make sure they get the care. So we've really tried to be innovative and trying to address still our patient needs, knowing that they've got concerns and issues that they need to be dealt with.
Absolutely. Babette?
Sure. As a nonprofit, behavioral health care with mental health and addiction, our world has really changed. The trajectory of what we're looking at has become new and dynamic and flexible. Our Aspire heroes and other healthcare heroes have had to respond to how do we continue to meet the needs of an increasing mental health demand. We've seen over 40% of people having mental health crisis, as well as 75% of our young adults with mental health and or addiction crisis, through a non-traditional means of what everyone was used to getting services. So we've increased our virtual capacity, we've increased the way in which we reach out to people, and we've continued to build private partnerships and public partnerships so that we can be innovative and flexible and have remained open throughout this pandemic that enables us to continue through the post-pandemic world at providing excellent services to our community.
And then Jennifer?
Yes, just to kind of create some context, of course, we're a hospital system in Orlando area. We have 7 hospitals right here near Orlando. And in May timeframe, we had our peak of about 105 patients with COVID in our hospitals. And of course, that went back down in June. And then in July, we hit over 500 at a time in our hospital. And so today, we're at 185. So that just shares where we're at with our COVID inpatients. We have taken great strides in trying to be as safe as possible in our hospitals and in our communities. And that is things like having temperature checks at all of our entrances, universal masking, no matter where you're at in the hospital, wearing a mask and promoting that within the community. Social distancing is important. And we've taken a lot of those employees that can work remotely, still do today. We also implemented things like contactless registration so that when you do come to a doctor's office or to the hospital, that not having to use paper or use your hands to touch things is important. And so all of this has really helped us streamline. And I think as a result of this, we'll continue to embrace technology and there'll be some embracing of a remote workforce probably for much time to come.
Absolutely. And Babette, I wanted to touch upon the mental health aspect of this, because not only here did you just bring it up, but also in all of our conversations that we've had recently for our different books, doing the interviews for the healthcare chapter, the aspect of mental health constantly comes up as maybe something that's been kind of disregarded by the general public as a real issue that's been pushed to the forefront during this pandemic. I'd be curious if you could give us a little bit more insight into really how the pandemic has affected some of your patients and how you're working to really approach this issue during such a delicate time.
Sure, Max. I mean, you're right on. So really what's happened and what we see through the pandemic, I think one thing that has really helped through the pandemic from a mental health standpoint is that the stigma is going away. Everybody is recognizing mental health matters, and it's time to get help when you need help. We opened a hotline that needed to come with the partnership of Orange County with Mayor Demings overnight back in March to be able to access calls of people that were seeing issues related to COVID, but other mental health issues. And we've kept that ongoing 24/7, receiving over 100,000 more calls in the same time period as last year. The chronicity and the acuity and then the ages of people needing mental health services is definitely changing. Our elder population, particularly those in assisted living, do not have as much contact with their families as they had in the past. So we're seeing traumas that are coming as a result of mental health issues as well. What I'd like to really focus on and what we've done for our patients is really look at, everybody knows ATM as a resource, an ATM model, where from the A standpoint, we're looking at accessibility and affordability so that everyone can access those services that they need, whether it be with Aspire Health, Advent Health, or our other partners, Florida Blue within the community. From an MT standpoint, making sure that it's transportation's available, that it's timely. Timeliness for when people need services is very critical. As they're reaching out, whether it be in the evening, in the daytime, throughout our Orlando community, that they can access the services. And then finally, from the M standpoint, meaningful. That when somebody is getting services, it's a paradigm shift in that teams are coming together now to make sure that our patients and individuals are getting team approaches to everything they need. Because while mental health is a huge factor, we're seeing it much more from the basic living needs standpoint coming together than the therapeutic component that often many people used to reach out to us for.
Absolutely. And Tony, Jennifer, I didn't know if either of you wanted to touch upon that.
Certainly. And thank you so much for sharing. We're definitely feeling the same. Our staff, you know, are human beings and have dealt with a lot of stress over the last few months. Our acuity in our hospitals are higher than they've ever been before. So there is a significant demand on them. And so this mental health awareness is critical. So we've launched recently, even internally, a campaign called Fine is Not Fine, and encouraging people that when they're asked how they're doing, to not just say fine, but to talk about it, to set a culture of talking about that, and then help them get to the resources that like mental health specialists and psychiatrists that can help them through this. So I appreciate our partners. And I know that as a community, I'm excited that we're at least starting to attack that stigma and make it more normal to take care of our minds.
Yeah, Max, just to add to what has already been said, and we understand how mental health plays a key role in the lives of many, and especially with what's happening today around the pandemic. One of the things that we've done to try to address and bring more attention to it internally is we've sort of refocused our foundation work through our Florida Blue Foundation, and we've really trying to come up with various themes and focus areas that address some of the challenges that are being shown in our community today. So our three focus areas going into the new year, actually, which we started this year, is food insecurity, health equity, and mental health. We know that we need to allocate more resources, dedicate more attention, more communication, and more education towards this topic.
And Tony, everything you just spoke about obviously plays a factor and a hand into the overall public health. And obviously, this is a topic that constantly comes up in our conversations. I'd be curious to get your take on how you feel or what you feel COVID-19 is really teaching us about the state of public health care, not even in just the Orlando, Central Florida region, but Florida as a whole. And I'd be curious to know how Florida Blue is working to provide more affordable health care options during this time.
Thanks for that question. And one of the things that we've seen that's played out, that is currently playing out nationally, is this pandemic is definitely shining a light on the health disparities that exist in all of our communities, both locally, statewide, and nationally, where a lot of those that are being impacted and are affected are Hispanics and African Americans. A matter of fact, the national numbers show that of the COVID deaths occurred this summer, 24% were Hispanic, even though 19% of the population in the country is Hispanic. These are national numbers, by the way. And then 18% were Black, even though 12.5% or so makes up the national population of Blacks in this country. So that shows that disproportionately how this pandemic is affecting those most vulnerable populations. And so what are we doing? We're trying to make sure that we are joining arms and joining forces with those organizations that are serving in these communities. For example, locally, like Lift Orlando, we're partnering with them on a number of projects to make sure that that community is getting the health care services that they need. And then we all know that the Affordable Care Act came into existence about 10, 12 years ago. And so we are the only health insurer in the state that offers plans in all 67 counties. And it's a way for us to make sure that we are helping people get the various options that they need to get in front of a healthcare professional. So we are doing our best to make sure that we are addressing the needs of these populations by offering affordable healthcare solutions.
Absolutely. And Babette, Jennifer, would either of you want to comment on that as well?
Well, what I'd like to add to what Tony's talking about is what the pandemic has brought, particularly in the behavioral health, mental health, and substance abuse world, is a host of flexibilities so that individuals, particularly individuals that generally can't access services, have been able to access services. However, those flexibilities have been time limited, and I'm hopeful that those will continue on because the number of individuals that need to access mental health, substance abuse, and physical health services continues to rise, particularly as we see not just the pandemic, but we have the social unrest and we have a very divisive election going on right now. That is just going to continue to increase, where we're seeing patients with much higher levels of acuity and chronicity. In addition to that, as the pandemic has lifted these things, our field is one of the only fields that doesn't have full parity. And when I say parity, there's no other disease I know of that limits the amount of services that somebody who needs services from a life-threatening brain disorder can receive. Those that have addiction disorders and mental health disorders do have limitations. So I'm hopeful through our community and through our business partners, we're going to be able to work together so we can continue to grow and be healthy, because these individuals that we work with, all of us do, are productive members of our society as we can continue to treat them and get them healthy.
Absolutely. Jennifer?
Yeah, there's nothing that can change culture so fast as a crisis. And we've seen that with telehealth as an example. The utilization has just dramatically increased. And that is not only a way to provide easy access for all, but it also is more affordable, frankly, over time. And so I can see us continuing to leverage telehealth, also talk about the importance of screenings, because the other thing the crisis has done is it has made people afraid to go get their mammograms or to get their colonoscopies. And so I would just encourage that we can continue to have the importance of screenings in order to avoid, you know, a higher acute or a cancer or something down the road.
On that same note of technology, and Jennifer, I want to ask you this first, and then we'll move on to the other panelists. I'd be curious to know how Advent Health's planned digital investment strategy for the coming year in 2021, how this has obviously evolved now with everything we've just experienced as far as, you know, upgrading connectivity, virtual care models, things like that.
So we have spent a lot of investment in our apps. We have an Abbott Health app, and it's focused on our consumers and trying to make it much easier to schedule appointments, to have the to be able to pay your bill on through the app, to be able to see doctors, nurse practitioners through the app. So we've continued to refine that and invest in that. So that would be one of the largest, I think, leveraging of technology there. We also are getting ready to go through a big change from, we're going to Epic, which is a significant investment for our hospital system over the next couple of years. And that's, again, focused on our consumer to provide them the best ease of connectivity between hospitals, between physician offices, and through our community partners.
Babette or Tony, would you like to speak on just more how technology is really transforming your business and your plans for your kind of digital strategy moving into 2021?
Sure. So we have dual strategies, certainly in a virtual world where we're providing services through audio and video for our patients. And then I have moved that obviously into the platform within our company. We also have AI within our pharmacy, what we affectionately call Roxy. She is one of our robotics who works in the pharmacy, and looking at how we can take what we've learned from that and replicate it through other parts within our company, as well as moving into and launching, which we've recently done apps so that there's more opportunity for that accessibility. Virtual monitoring of our patients, as well as virtual meetings and access to communities that are underserved, underinsured, or uninsured, we have found is the best way to bring the services to those communities. Our engagement has gone up in those communities, and our no-show rates have dropped to less than 7%. When you look at national averages of 30 and 40%, we know that we're making an impact, and we need to continue those services ongoing into the future and expand them.
Tony?
I would say that virtual health is definitely a key component in our strategy and in our plans as we move forward. And actually, as COVID-19 hit, we actually knew we had to speed up the timeline and begin to work more diligently at bringing this level of services to our members. And I would say that virtual health for us is more than just about providing visits. We want to make sure that we provide our members that have critical care conditions more opportunities to deal with their disease and communicate more with their providers. And I'd actually like to give one example about the platform that we primarily use is Teladoc. And they merged with a company called Livongo. And this is really a company that's really going to be focused on addressing the needs of members that have critical care conditions. And so we were really the first health plan to adopt working with them and offering our members with diabetes an enhanced end-to-end experience through this special platform. And we're really looking forward to working with this group to make sure that we're addressing our members that have this critical care need and to be able to do this all through a virtual platform.
Absolutely. And we actually just had a question come in from our Q&A feature, and I think it's definitely worth discussing here. We have gotten a little less than our 5-minute warning here, so we will try to get through this as quick as possible. I'd like to pose this first to, I'll go my left to right here, Jennifer, then Babette, and then Tony. Jennifer, what is the best advice you feel for employers to help keep their employees safe that cannot work remotely at this time?
think the number one thing is to provide temperature checks before they come on site or as they're coming on site, and then to wear the mask unless you're in a room with very few people and you're at least 6 feet apart. Taking social distancing seriously, taking masking temp checks seriously, I think is the very best thing that you can do to protect each other.
Babette?
We've moved to and have been since the beginning temperature checks, a virtual assessment for all of our employees with 6 questions that are critical questions that would go to our infection control department should we need follow-up before somebody comes in the building. And then we do have mandatory masks unless you are 6 feet social distance. Even our meetings with people in office have been moved to virtual meetings if we can't appropriately social distance.
Tony?
We also use an app to make sure that we are assessing members' health as they're coming on to property. And it's important that we continue to ask questions, to test our members, and to make sure that they are safe when coming onto our environment.
Absolutely. And I know we only have about a minute or so left here, so I just wanted to get to this last question. As the title of the panel suggests, this we're talking about the current and the future landscape of the healthcare sector. As it relates, you know, to your business and your sector, what would you say is your outlook for the healthcare sector as we look towards 2021 and even beyond that? Babette, we'll start with you, Tony, and then Jennifer.
So hopeful that the communities are going to come together, business sector comes together, and that we're continuing to rebuild together so that services are delivered that need to be delivered, healthcare is integrated, and we all partner and support the leadership with Mayor Demings and Mayor Dyer and their visions to make this the best community that it can be, even beyond where we are.
Absolutely. Tony?
Yeah, I would like to tag on to a word that Babette used. She said integration. I believe that collaboration is key. We can't do this alone. We need partners to make sure that we're all coming with our best solutions, best ideas, to be able to address the challenges that we're still going to be facing as we move forward.
Definitely. And Jennifer?
Yeah, we are going to continue to face some economic challenges over the next 12 months. And we need to still be alert, of course, with this virus. And so keeping our ear to the ground with our experts, our physicians helping to lead the way, I think is important. And then absolutely looking out for each other, looking out for our consumers and our community, and rebuilding together is definitely key.
You've been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Malone. Thank you for tuning in.